that could bring us together without a disaster. In light of such a message, what we know is that all the persecutions of our past, all the ethnic cleansings, the inquisitions, the religious wars based on our differences, every one of those becomes obsolete. If we all carry that same message and we have that degree of commonality, then the reasons that we've destroyed one another in the past no longer hold up. We can still destroy one another, we just have to find a new reason, because it cannot be based on those differences. In the mid-1970s, once again, I'm going to quote from Carl Sagan. He was involved in a project called SETI, S-E-T-I, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. He was asked to testify before Congress and the Senate on why the government should fund a project to search for a signal from beyond our world. What good, well, sure, it's interesting, but what good could it possibly do in our world to know that there's something else out there? And the way Dr. Sagan answered that question, I believe, applies to what's happening with the cells in our bodies. He said, even if we didn't find anything, he said the effort itself would have what he calls a cohesive and constructive influence upon the whole of the human condition. And he goes on to say it could do so by strengthening the bonds which join all humans and other beings on the planet. That's just the search, the cooperation to come together and find the search. And my question is, if the search could have such powerful effects upon us, such cohesive effects, what if we actually found something? What if we really found something out there? Well, in a very real sense, the code in the cells of all life is a signal from something beyond our everyday world. And while it may not be in an electronic form that we receive from an antenna dish being broadcast light years across the galaxies and the vast distances of deep interstellar space, it is a message that has been here from the day of our origin. All the indications are from the earliest, the most primitive forms of life. If DNA exists, this message is in that DNA. So in a very real sense, we do have a message from beyond our everyday world. Our focus in this program, we're going to explore the mystery, the meaning, and the power of a single unifying principle. It's a principle that's going to begin to help us answer the question, who are we? Who are we in this world? For us to talk about how this message in ourselves translates into language, we're going to have to talk about life just a little bit. So for the next couple of minutes, it's going to sound a little like Biology 101, and it'll be very easy, very simple, and a lot of fun, because this is a very, very unconventional way of looking at life. So I'll invite you to use the whiteboard of your mind and allow me to, in broad brushstrokes, paint the pictures of the images that I'm describing and help you to see them in your mind as you would on a projection screen or on a computer screen. When we talk about life, traditionally we think of cells as spherical bodies of the sticky, gooey, protoplasmic stuff that somehow magically allows life to be what it is in our bodies. Within every cell of life, we now know that there's information, 23 pairs or 46 chromosomes make up the interior of each cell of life. And those chromosomes are actually made of long strands of a molecule that's called DNA. And that long strand of DNA is made of shorter strands that we call genes. Well, for us to read biology, and again, this is a very, very unconventional way of thinking about biology. When I was in school, no one ever said to me that we could think of biology as language or that we could think of alphabets as chemical codes. This is very, very untraditional. But to read our biology as words, we've got to cross those traditional boundaries that have separated us from our world in the past. We've got to be willing to honor the knowledge of our past and of our ancestors. People have come before us. They understood our world. They understood how we work. They used a very, very different language. You know, our science, Western science, is only about 400 years old. People ask me all the time. They say, well, did we know anything before science? What happened prior to 400 years ago? Well, of course we knew. something before science. We had a tremendously deep understanding that crosses many cultures of how our world works. Science came along 400 years ago and is simply redefining it in a little bit different language. And as good as science is, and I am a scientist and I believe in the scientific method, the best scientists will tell you that our science is incomplete. And one of the reasons it may be incomplete is because we have overlooked some of the most important keys, the most important links that allow us to cross the boundaries that separate the sciences as we see them today. So we've got to be willing to honor the knowledge of our past and our ancestors and marry all of what we know of our world as physics, chemistry, biology, history, and spirituality today into what we knew of our past to allow us to arrive at a greater wisdom. And when we do that, cells begin to look differently. If you can think of every cell in your body as a library, what do libraries contain? Well, they contain books. Think of those 23 pairs or 46 chromosomes as 46 books inside of every cell. And all of those books, the chromosomes, are made of long strands of DNA. If we can think of the DNA as chapters within the book, and the DNA is broken into smaller segments that we call genes, if the genes can be the paragraphs and the sentences within those chapters. If you just for a moment can allow yourself to think along these lines, then we're creating a very powerful metaphor for the way, precisely the way, that information is stored in our cells. Well, if our cells in fact do work this way, what is the first thing you'd expect to see when you open up any book before chapter one? What do you see? What's the first thing you see in any book? I'd like to ask this question because some people get very technical. Yes, there is an acknowledgments page. Yes, there's a copyright page. Yes, there's a table of contents. And even more significant than that, more often than not, the first thing you see in a book is you're going to see something that tells you what that book is all about, something that describes what you're about to read. You're going to see an introduction. And it appears that the books of our cells work precisely the same way. The message in our cells appears to exist in many, many layers. So I'm going to say this now, and as we go through the program, it'll make more sense, and we'll describe it in more detail. The message appears to exist in many layers. The very first layer is the introduction to the cells of our bodies. Every layer has its own code, its own unique code, although the codes are simple. Now that we know how they work, it took me 12 years to find that very first key that allowed me to translate that very first layer. And that first layer, that introduction, is very brief, yet it's the potent introduction that we will describe in this program today. When we see images of DNA on the television screens and on the science specials on television and our books and magazines, what we typically see is the familiar double helix, the two strands, parallel strands of information. And there are all these funny little letters that are scattered along those strands, T, C, G, A, G, A, T, 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 A, C, A. There's even a movie that came out a few years ago. It's called Gattaca, G-A-T-T-A-C-A, about a very specific sequence of DNA in the people of our future. Well, we see those letters, and no one really says, it goes into a lot of detail about what they mean. But if we're going to translate the message in ourselves, we've got to understand a little bit about what those mysterious letters mean. Because when we look at the map of all life, what's called the human genome, it is simply made of different combinations of only those four letters, C, T, A, and G. So what are they? What do they stand for? Well, they're symbols. They are shorthand symbols that represent much deeper, more complex kinds of information. Those four letters are called the DNA bases, B-A-S-E-S. The T stands for a base that is called thymine. And the thymine is made of only four elements, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon, and that's it. Hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon. Specifically, the DNA base of thymine, what we see is a T, is six atoms of hydrogen, two atoms of nitrogen, two atoms of oxygen, and five atoms of carbon. This is as technical as we're going to get today, I promise. And I know many of you are taking notes, and it's important for you to have all this information so that your mind can see how this code actually works. So the T represents different combinations of hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon. The C represents the same thing, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon. However, there are 5 atoms of hydrogen, 3 atoms of nitrogen, 1 atom of oxygen, 4 atoms of carbon. The A represents adenine. It's exactly the same thing. Hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, different numbers of those atoms. And the G is guanine. That also represents hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon. So all of those 4 letters are symbols that simply represent what are called the 4 elements of life. Hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, different combinations of those. So that wasn't too bad, was it?